Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into a really compelling story from the Vietnam War.
Yeah, we're looking at the experiences of the 6th Special Operations Squadron. You might know them as the Hobos.
That's right. And we're drawing heavily on some fantastic firsthand accounts, mainly from Episode 3 Prairie Fire Missions over on the Military Tales YouTube channel. These are veterans talking about their own experiences.
Exactly. And our goal here really is to understand what made this squadron tick, what made them unique, especially their role supporting the Special Operations Forces, SOG, which is legendary stuff.
Definitely. We've sort of sifted through their conversation in that episode, focusing on the parts that really stood out, the memorable bits that paint a picture of their service.
For personal stories, you know, that's what brings it to life.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning. The 6th SOS, it gets formed, what, late 1967?
Yeah, late 67. And the background, as they explained it in Episode 3, is that the 1st Air Commando Squadron was moving out, heading to Thailand.
Okay, so that left a gap.
Precisely. A gap that needed filling. And that's how the 6th SOS, the Hobos, were stood up. Started out stateside, interestingly enough, England Air Force Base.
Right, and the leadership situation sounds, well, a bit fluid at first.
Uh-huh. You had Winda Porter stepping in as the sort of de facto commander initially. Then Wallace Ford arrived as the official squadron commander.
And they mentioned De Porter and Bob Gucknar doing early training flights in the A1Hs.
Yeah, that's a great little detail. Taking those Sky Raiders up with dummy bombs, just getting the feel for the aircraft. It wasn't exactly, you know, a smooth, polished startup.
Doesn't sound like it. And their journey to Vietnam, hearing them talk about it in Prairie Fire Missions, it sounds pretty wild.
Oh, yeah. They mentioned stopping at Eielson Air Force Base in Alaska. Freezing cold. Apparently, they only had short sleeve shirts.
Seriously? Wow.
Then off to Clark Air Base for jungle survival training. That included the Greedo exercise.
The yelling thing.
To signal. That's the one. And learning about rice chits. How important rice could be, sometimes more valuable than actual money for bartering.
That detail really sticks with you, doesn't it? The practicality.
It really does. Shows you the kind of grounded prep they needed. And there's that story about De Porter's class losing a bunch of their rice. Kind of humanizes it all.
For sure. Even elite units have those moments. Then actually getting the planes, the A1Hs, to England AFB before heading over.
Right, ferrying the aircraft.
Gear.
One guy talks about a freezing flight over Colorado.
Oh, yeah, and having to flip upside down in the cockpit to find the heater controls. Can you imagine?
Crazy stuff. And the arrival in Pleiku itself wasn't exactly smooth sailing either. Colonel Rep apparently took command from Colonel Ford, like, right as Ford stepped off the plane.
Oof. Talk about awkward timing.
Yeah, sounds like it. And that maybe hints at some initial friction. The veterans in Episode 3 mentioned this mix, you know. Experienced pilots from the 1st SOS alongside the new guys.
Bound to be some tension there, right? Especially under pressure, forming a new unit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Takes time to build that cohesion. It's not just about having skilled pilots.
Okay, let's talk about the plane itself, the A1 Sky Raider. Because listening to the veterans in Prairie Fire Missions, they clearly thought this was the right tool for the job.
Oh, definitely. They really emphasize its ability to carry just a massive amount of ordnance in all different kinds.
Yeah.
Bombs, rockets, guns.
But the key thing seemed to be the radio.
Yes, the FM radio. That's what they highlight. Unlike the fast jets, the F-4s and such, that often had to relay comms through an airborne controller.
Right, like FACs or other command posts.
Exactly. The A1 pilots could talk directly to the troops on the ground. Real-time communication. In close air support, that's everything.
A huge advantage. Life-saving, no doubt.
They flat out say it was the ideal airplane for their mission, supporting guys in tight spots.
And that mission, the primary one, as Episode 3 makes clear, was supporting MACVSOG.
Military Assistance Command Vietnam Studies and Observations Group. For anyone listening who doesn't know, SOG was doing the really secret, really dangerous stuff.
Deep reconnaissance, cross-border ops, sabotage, that kind of thing.
Yep. High-risk missions, insertions, extractions. And the 6th SOS, the Hobos, they were basically SOG's dedicated air support, their lifeline from above.
The veterans share some incredible stories about that support.
They really do. Like Don Dineen's mission. He gets diverted to help a team in trouble, but all he has loaded are these heavy bombs. 500, 750 pounders.
Wow. Trying to do close air support with those?
Yeah.
That's threading a needle with a sledgehammer.
Seriously. Shows you the kind of adaptability they needed. Okay, this is what we've got. Let's make it work under immense pressure.
Incredible. And what about that technique they described bombing the Ho Chi Minh Trail.
Yeah, creating a sort of safe zone, a clearing with bomb blasts so they could pull out a team from CCC Command and Control Central.
Just smart tactical thinking, using the tools they had in creative ways to save guys on the ground.
Absolutely. And you really feel the connection they had with the SOG guys.
Yeah.
The team leaders.
Yeah, they mentioned the SOG leaders could actually come back to play coup, hang out with the pilots, decompress a bit.
That speaks volumes, doesn't it? The trust, the mutual respect between the air crews and the ground teams. They knew they were saving American lives directly.
It wasn't just abstract. It was personal.
Yeah.
These weren't just call signs. They were people relying on each other.
Exactly. That human element really comes through.
But doing this kind of work, it came at a cost. A heavy one.
Yeah, tragically. The veterans in Episode 3 are clear about the losses. The unit lost 15 aircraft and 12 pilots killed. Jerry Helmich was the last one.
15 planes, 12 pilots. Those numbers really drive home the constant danger they're flying into.
They absolutely do. And the specific stories, the close calls,
yeah,
they make it even more real.
Like the mission where the ground commander actually asked for napalm right on top of their own position.
Can you imagine? The enemy was that close. The pilot talks about the shock and then hearing, "You got us," after the drop. Just harrowing.
Chilling. Absolutely chilling. And then there's the pilot whose landing gear jammed.
Oh, man. Yeah. Handle stuck. Had to basically do an upside-down mid-air repair inside the cockpit.
The kind of nerve and skill.
Yeah.
It's almost unbelievable.
Right. And the guy who hit trees twice.
Yeah.
On the same day.
Because of the smoke. Right. White phosphorus obscuring everything.
Uh-huh. Low altitude, bad visibility. And then Bernie Fisher, Medal of Honor recipient Bernie Fisher, takes pictures of the damaged plane. It's just this incredible mix of extreme danger and, well, almost dark humor.
And that Deck Soot mission, supporting the outpost in terrible weather.
Yeah, both pilots got Distinguished Flying Crosses for that one. And the joke was, apparently, that the award was just for surviving it, not necessarily brilliant flying.
Huh. That gallows humor again. It pops up a lot in these high-stress environments.
It seems like it was essential. But even the funny stories underscore the constant risk. It wasn't just flying. It was nonstop problem-solving under fire.
And it wasn't just the pilots taking risks. We need to talk about the ground crews.
Absolutely crucial, often unseen but vital. There's an ordnance mechanic in Episode 3 who gives some real insight into the dangers they face.
Loading the weapons, right?
Yeah. Handling napalm, thin-skinned tanks needed water barrels nearby for leaks. The 2.75-inch rockets, big risk of static electricity setting them off.
Jeez.
And the 20-millimeter cannons. Making sure the bore was clear, dealing with feeder issues. He tells a story about a gun firing accidentally during arming.
Whoa.
And another near miss with a taxiing plane because a round got stuck in the gun. It was dangerous work on the flight line, too.
You really get a sense of their dedication. Long hours, keeping those complex birds flying and armed.
Totally. And it's interesting, he points out that often the enlisted guys didn't know the full details of the SOG missions.
Just knew they had to get the planes ready.
Right. Speaks to the level of secrecy around SOG. Even the guys loading the bombs might not have known the where or why. Just trusted the mission.
Amidst all this intensity, though, there were lighter moments shared in Episode 3. Some pretty funny ones.
Definitely. Like that raw egg toast initiation thing at Condon.
Oh, yeah. Involving the wing commander.
Yeah.
And Bob Carr having to think fast to avoid a huge mess.
Classic military unit bonding stuff. Right. Builds camaraderie, breaks the tension.
And what about the real men eat napkins challenge?
Huh. That escalating dare in Guatemala, apparently with some special forces officers, ending with someone eating a rice bug. Just wild.
You just can't make this stuff up. And the squadron dog with goggles.
You gotta love that detail. It's those little human touches that make the story so vivid.
They probably needed those moments, didn't they, to stay sane?
I imagine so. A vital release valve in that kind of pressure cooker environment.
Now, things didn't stay static. The war evolved. Structures changed. They touch on the 633rd Special Operations Wing forming.
Yeah, and how that impacted the 6th SOS. One big thing was pulling experienced pilots out of combat, flying to become instructors.
That must have been tough. Important for training, obviously, but takes experience out of the cockpit.
Exactly. Likely changed the dynamic, the operational tempo for the squadron, a new set of challenges.
And eventually, the 6th SOS itself was deactivated.
Yeah, the end of their specific chapter, aircraft transferred to Thailand. Must have been a pretty significant moment for everyone who'd served with the hobos.
Wrapping up such a unique and intense period.
The end of that specific mission, that specific band of brothers, you know.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, reflecting on Episode 3 and these veterans' accounts, What's the big takeaway for you?
For me, it's just the sheer bravery and ingenuity of these guys in the 6th SOS, their commitment to supporting SOG, flying those A1s into incredibly dangerous situations. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
And hearing it directly from them, it adds such a personal layer. You understand the risks, the sacrifices, in a way you just don't get from official histories.
Totally agree. It moves beyond just facts and figures. You connect with the human experience, the fear, the bonds, the close calls, even the weird humor. It makes history feel real.
Which kind of leads to a final thought for you, the listener. Think about the lasting impact. How did these experiences flying those missions, supporting SOG, shape these individuals long after the war?
That's a powerful question. Their lives afterwards.
Yeah. What did they carry with them? Maybe digging a bit deeper into the 6th SOS or MAGVSOG history could offer even more perspective on this unique and honestly quite incredible story.
It definitely leaves you with a deep appreciation for everyone involved, air crews, ground crews, and the bonds they forged facing down those kinds of dangers together. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.